saving money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio, episode 536, coming to you on Wednesday, April 24th. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including USC getting back the ultimate prize, the Heisman Trophy of Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush getting his Heisman Trophy back. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the return of Kyle Ford, some more transfer portal stuff, look at the spring game, and so much more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy, email address reignoftroy@fanside.com, and our phone number 818-643-7227. Suck it, what's Bruin Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. So much has gone down since our last episode. We had a hiatus that we didn't expect to have. Both of us ended up getting sick. We ended up, you know, going out of town for a while. We had a million different things that took us away from podcasting. But hey, we're back, and there's a million things to talk about. Like, Kenny in the chat just said Andy Enfield's gone. We haven't even talked about Andy Enfield being gone.
Who's Mike Musselman? Eric Musselman.
He's in as USC's new head basketball coach.
I could not name a single member of the USC basketball team today. There have been a bajillion transfers out and a bajillion transfers in. And that we can save for a whole other day. But yes, the Andy Enfield left as part of a string of dominoes that resulted in John Calipari ending up at Arkansas.
Yes.
That made sense. Because sports.
Sports. Sports. Liverpool has lost the Premier League title. What else has happened? Max has already wrapped up the F1 title. Romberti says
Chelsea lost to Arsenal 5-0.
Yeah, but that didn't matter as much. Romberti says that spring practice is coming. Wentz,
this is true.
Yeah, so much has happened. Bear Alexander went into the transfer portal and came out of the transfer portal. But the most important thing, I think we have to start at the top. Reggie Bush getting his Heisman Trophy back. The news broke early this morning, Wednesday, April 24th. There was a tweet from Pete Thamel about it and said that it was going to be imminent. An announcement would come shortly, and it did. Reggie Bush is back. Quote, we are thrilled to welcome Reggie Bush back to the Heisman family in recognition of his college, of his collegiate accomplishments, says Michael Comerford, president of the Heisman Trophy Trust. Quote, we have considered the enormous changes in college football athletics over the last several years in deciding that now is the right time to reinstate the trophy for Reggie. We are so happy to have him back. Alicia, your thoughts.
We are so happy to have him back. It's about damn time. The trophy never should have been taken away in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's not even about the changes in amateurism. That's the that's the line that they're going with. The changes in amateurism have them reassessing the the rescindment of that, I don't know if that's a word, but, you know, them taking the trophy away. For me, it didn't even need to be that. Reggie Bush allegedly broke NCAA rules, which he still vehemently denies, by the way. So, you know, whatever. But it was never about whether or not the rules should have been valid or not. Like, they were the rules at the time. My issue was Johnny Manziel broke those same rules, kept his trophy. We know Heisman winner after Heisman winner after Heisman winner. People would go on podcasts and talk about all of the underhanded dealings of college football. We knew they were all doing exactly what Reggie allegedly is accused of doing. And they took that trophy away, in my view, improperly, because that was not what the question that the Heisman Trophy was asking or answering when they took the trophy away. And even if they did in the moment decide to take it away, it shouldn't have taken this long for them to figure out, like, oh, actually, this was dumb. The moment Johnny Manziel opened his mouth about signing autographs and getting paid for it, they should have said, oh, right, you know, everybody has been, you know, the issue was not whether or not the rules were right. The issue was that no one was paying attention to the rules, and you,
well, I
you arbitrarily decided that the one guy that got made an example of is going to be the only one that doesn't get to stand on that stage every year.
Right. Well, when Manziel came out and said that he had taken stuff, like, they should have stripped his if that was going to be the precedent.
Yeah,
that they had set,
they
right?
set a precedent and then didn't follow through on it with anybody else, which was ridiculous. So good on them for finally bringing it back. It restores that. It doesn't necessarily give USC fans or Reggie Bush back the decade plus that all of this stuff has been going on for, but at least it's to me, it's the final domino, because, you know, I saw people on Twitter asking about the national title and all that kind of stuff. That's never coming back. Like, that's just, the wins were vacated. The national title was vacated. That's gone. It's also irrelevant because we all know who won that national title. It's completely pointless to a certain point. So to me, this is the bookend. This closes the book on the Reggie Bush stuff, on the NCAA, on the silliness of amateurism, on the Heisman, on sanctions, on all of that kind of stuff. This was the last domino to fall, and thank God it did, because now we can sort of move on. I know you've been wanting USC fans to move on forever in terms of this, but
I'm gonna, you know, reiterate what Kenny in the chat said about, I'm honestly shocked he got it back. I'm shocked he got it back. In the sense of, you know, yes, all the reasons were there for the Heisman Trophy Trust to not to take it away. If you're going to take away the NCAA is going to take away his records because he was deemed ineligible afterwards, I see there's logic in that part, sure. But the Heisman Trophy is not an NCAA award, right? Like, it's not exactly the same thing. So, but the Heisman Trophy was what was sort of keeping Reggie from coming back to SC. We know that he came back in 2020 when the 10-year disassociation had ended, and SC said that, you know, they could talk about him again. He wasn't Voldemort anymore. But it really wasn't anything other than that, right? Like, it's not like he was coming on campus. He wasn't coming to games, with the exception of the times when he would come as part of the Fox crew, right? Like, they couldn't necessarily use him as leverage in the recruiting game to the way that you'd want. He wasn't there on the sideline as your star player, and as your star alum. Like, all those things you couldn't really do. It was like your ex getting, you know, saying that she'll look at your text again and she'll talk to you, but, like, not give you that date yet until the Heisman Trophy comes back. Well, the Heisman Trophy's coming back, so make the plans, make your reservations. The date is on, because Reggie can actually be back now, right? Like, he can be back at the Coliseum. His number can be retired. justly, like we know that it's been retired, but it can be there on at the Coliseum without any like weirdness. And then there's the awkward weirdness of like all of this stuff that we're talking about. Reggie Bush never was an issue with O.J. Simpson, and yeah. Like and the O.J. obviously wasn't found guilty of the things that he was found guilty of something else, but that's a side point. I'm not going to sit here and talk about whether or not he was guilty or anything. What I'm talking about is like OJ was so toxic as a person, and yet he never got his Heisman taken away. He never got his Heisman taken out of Heritage Hall. He never got his number taken down off the Coliseum. It was Reggie Bush, and that was just like the irony of it, right? And
yeah.
Now we get to this point where in our little hiatus, OJ passed away too, right? Like, he passes away, and 2 weeks later, Reggie Bush has his Heisman Trophy back. And to me, there's this weird world where I've always wondered, what would it be like if OJ's life had gone differently, in the sense of, you know, we grew up with our parents talking about how big of a deal OJ was as a celebrity, and it's hard to wrap our heads around that because of our age, right?
Yeah.
And like my mom telling me, it would be like if like Shaq today or Charles Barkley or something, like that's the level of celebrity he was and the level of how adored he was. And I've never been able to wrap my head around that, because what would it be like if SC had a guy like that on the sideline that was your big number one, you know, alum? And Marcus Allen is a great football player, but he doesn't have the personality of what people talked about with OJ, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. Here you are, and you're probably wondering, why did I get on an OJ tangent? Because of Reggie. Because now Reggie can be that guy. Reggie can be that guy that we always wondered, what would it have been like growing up if OJ was always around? Reggie's that guy in terms of the personality, in terms of the marketability, in terms of the big aura and all that stuff. He's there. And the sucky part is, like, SC has won 8 Heisman trophies, and they've never been able to take a picture, and they never will be able to take a picture of all 8 Heisman Trophy winners, because OJ was toxic. And then the last year we've lost Charlie White and OJ, who was already toxic, and then yeah. Reggie Bush, who was, you know, got his Heisman taken away. Like, in an alternate reality, there would have been a moment, you know, 15, 16 months ago, where there would have been a picture of Caleb Williams next to Leinart and Bush and Palmer and yeah. White and Garrett and all those guys, holding up their Heisman trophies. And how incredible of a moment would that have been? We're never going to have that. You're never going to be able to cherish in that moment. But what you're going to be able to have now is Reggie Bush being back, which I think is, you know, quite a reward, even if it's not, you know, not going to make up for the 10 years lost, like you said, or what, 14 years lost.
Yeah. Yeah, but he gets to lead the team out of the tunnel now, which is, he said he would not do until his Heisman was restored. And now he gets yeah. to do that. And that'll be a huge, huge moment mm-hmm. for the fan base, for the program, all of that. But to stay on the OJ topic, Greg in the chat asked, you think the Heisman Trust embarrassed themselves by giving their condolences when OJ died, but not recognizing Reggie? I don't necessarily want to draw a line between OJ dying and Reggie getting his Heisman back, because we know that the process of Reggie getting his Heisman back didn't just happen in the last like 2 weeks. This right. has been an ongoing conversation. But I will say that
also, even if you bring up that conspiracy theory yeah. of like, oh, they were waiting for OJ to go to get Reggie Bush, that, like, I see the parallels there, but like, when you think about it, it doesn't actually make sense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah, it's prime conspiracy fodder, where it's like, right. oh, well, isn't that interesting? But also you follow that thread and you're like, no, actually, no one, this isn't that big of a deal.
Right.
But I will say that I think that the Heisman Trust giving their condolences to OJ the way that they did was one of those public sort of front-facing moments that kind of exposed the farce of all of this for what it was. Right. When they took the Heisman away from Reggie, they did, if I remember correctly, it's 14 years ago, so sorry if I don't remember. But I remember, if I remember correctly, the statement that they put out when they took it away was about character. They said that the Heisman is not just about the sport, it's about character, and they could not have Reggie represent the Heisman because of the improper benefits and stuff, because what it spoke to his character.
Right.
And to let O.J. Simpson be part of that fraternity all the while and give condolences as though he was a full standing member of that fraternity sort of just highlighted the silliness of how Reggie should have never been blackballed in the way that he did,
in the way that he was.
So, I think Greg, you're right. I think the Heisman Trust embarrassed themselves with the handling of OJ, but not just when they gave the condolences. OJ is not the only Heisman winner who's done questionable things in their lives. Like, it was about the full picture of the contrast between OJ and Reggie.
Yeah.
The contrast between things that actually make you an embarrassment to the Heisman Trust and things that just are about weird technical stupid rules of amateurism that I think we can all agree were and are like invalid ways to run a multi-billion-dollar sporting industry.
Right. Reggie getting popped the way he did did not bring shame on the Heisman Trophy like the Heisman Trophy Trust thought it did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If they hadn't taken the Heisman from him, nobody would have sat there the next year and said, how dare Reggie be on that stage? Literally nobody. They created this problem for themselves.
Yeah, the only people that would have whined about it would have been Texas people whining about Vince Young not winning a Heisman Trophy he had no business winning. So,
well, okay, can I give my second giant pet peeve, because I saw this on Twitter today.
The Bomani Jackson?
Yeah, and Bomani was soaking that stuff up, so I don't necessarily want to like give him this, but I will give him this because it does hit on something that I think is broader than just this conversation. The stupidest argument in football specific, because of the very nature of the way that football was. I think you can sort of apply this to baseball a little bit, but like football specifically, it's the quarterback duel. It's the one offensive player outplayed the other offensive player, thus that offensive player is better than the other offensive player. It's head to head when you're dealing with a quarterback and a quarterback, or a quarterback and a running back, or a running back and a running back, or a wide receiver. It's like they are not playing each other. Vince Young didn't beat Reggie Bush. He beat Reggie Bush's defense, who Reggie Bush had nothing to do with, all intents and purposes. Like, it's the silliest argument to say that Vince Young's performance in the national title game somehow makes Reggie Bush's Heisman invalid, when A, it's a season-long award, it's not an individual game award, and B, I will go back to, look at who was on the field for USC in that national title game and tell me that Vince Young did something special against a special defense. Like, that's just not what happened. Like,
Reggie Bush had 784 first place votes for the Heisman Trophy. Vince Young had 79.
Yeah, it was a landslide for a reason.
Like, he literally had over 700 more first place votes.
And that's not to diminish Vince Young. Vince Young was an incredible college quarterback.
Yeah,
incredible
Vince
playmaker.
Vince Young's season was worthy of recognition for something, but he was never winning that Heisman Trophy over Reggie.
Not with what Reggie did.
Like, no.
I'm sorry, Reggie. Just, yeah.
My last point here is, like, finally SC can sort of cherish Reggie Bush the way that they should have the whole time. And especially when, you know, it sucks that SC has this ability to sort of not be able to celebrate its stars for various things, right? Like OJ was toxic, right? Mike Garrett and Pat Hayden
ruined themselves, and
Lin Swan ruined their status as ADs. Like, people don't cheer for them in the same way, right? Like,
Pat Hayden and Lin Swan might get booed if they were at the Coliseum. Yeah, today. Like,
it's a sucky situation that you just can't have legends that stay, you know, in.
Well, you and I were talking about this with Marcus Allen specifically. Like, Marcus Allen, incredible running back, but like, yeah, it's almost like Marcus Allen by default has landed in this position as USC's greatest football alumni.
Right.
Because by default, like, everybody else of that era or of that sort of generation has taken themselves out of the running. Like, mm-hmm, of the old school USC guys, you have Ronnie Lott and you have Marcus Allen.
Yeah.
And the rest of them have just like, for multiple reasons, just like ruined their legacies in terms of like guys that are up on that level. So, you know.
Now there's Reggie.
Reggie and Matt and Carson can be, but like you said, I think that Carson very much is not that personality. Mm-hmm. I think Matt Leinart could be, but he's also just sort of a different kind of like, just for different kind of swagger to Reggie. Reggie has, like you said, more of that personality that sort of shines through, yeah, that makes him marketable. And you know, again, Marcus Allen doesn't exactly have that either. So,
right, yeah, but the fact is, nobody can touch the sort of aura that Reggie has.
Yeah,
and you know, Matt Leinart was a great football player. Marcus Allen was an insanely good football player, like, Hall of Famer in both, yeah, pro and college football, right? And doesn't match the aura of Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush is back. So
Ilium in the chat says something that is terribly true. If OJ doesn't commit those crimes, there was a 100% chance that he's a former USC AD as well.
So OJ was a sideline reporter.
True.
And Lin Swan became a sideline reporter. Both of those guys ended up being... Oh, yeah, like, Lin Swan ended up being an AD after being a sideline reporter. Yeah, yeah, he was on the path. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And by the way, never let Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, no, Carson Palmer, any of those it's guys a new, be an AD.
A new rule. Never. If you won a Heisman at USC, you are not allowed to become the USC AD.
Yeah, sorry, Caleb. But
sorry, Caleb.
It's,
yeah,
it's not happening. Not
no.
Let's look to a couple Discord messages we got from Tim in LA. Reggie said he wouldn't lead the team out of the tunnel until he got his Heisman back. So will that be the home opener against Utah State or a marquee game like Penn State or maybe Notre Dame? What say you?
I suspect. Well, okay. Does he have a gig right now? Does he have a media gig right now?
I don't think
he does.
Think he's not with Fox anymore.
Yeah. So theoretically his availability will be there. I think that at the Coliseum, maybe you do it. My suspicion is it would be Notre Dame. I think it would be Notre Dame for the Bush push of it all.
Here's the problem, though.
You could make an argument for just doing it on homecoming, which I think would be Nebraska, I would wager. Maybe Rutgers.
Homecoming is Nebraska, November 16th. Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're going to wait till November, you might as well just do it for Notre Dame.
Now, I think there is an actually good argument from a USC perspective. I don't know if Reggie Bush buys in, like, gives the okay for this. From a USC perspective, you have him lead the team out for Utah State. You do Reggie Bush bobbleheads or something like that. You do a giveaway. Mm-hmm. And you let people know well ahead of time that will be the case.
The best marketing, the marketing team wants this to be Utah State.
September 7th, Utah State.
You sell it out.
Yes.
And you get the demand. Because Wisconsin will have demand the first Big Ten game. Penn State and Nebraska will have their demands because those are big opponents, just like Wisconsin, right? Yeah. And Notre Dame obviously will have its demand. So,
and Nebraska will travel.
So. Yes. And so Utah State is the obvious one from a marketing perspective. But from the fan perspective, is that the one that's going to get you juiced up? No.
It's Notre Dame.
The answer is Notre Dame. But I don't think that you want to wait until November 30th. The flip side of this is...
I'm Reggie, I want to wait till November 30th.
Well, so the flip side of this is, and there's a question from Kenny in the chat, do you think that both the 5 and 13 will be up there in the Coliseum for Utah State? They've got to do the retirement thing for Caleb Williams, too. So when do you do that? Do you wait for a moment for him to be... when they've done it in the past, it hasn't been a big ceremony. So it could just be a thing that they just unveil it and it's there and they just don't say anything and whatnot. But do you let Caleb have the Utah State game? And then even though he probably can't be there because the Bears are going to end up playing the next week, right? Like maybe there wouldn't be a come on the... We don't know when the NFL schedule comes out. It comes out, I think, next week, right? So we'll figure that out then, I guess. But maybe the best of both worlds is Wisconsin. It's the first Big Ten game. It's a big game without being the first, and you don't have to wait until November of Notre Dame.
What if you cheat here a little bit and have him, like, just straight out the gun, have him lead the team out of whatever tunnel against LSU, and then you've scratched that itch. Then when you do the jersey stuff, like, he's already been with the team, so it's not like, it's not a huge deal, and then you have him do Notre Dame as, like, the tunnel lead out.
Yeah. Maybe that works. Want to give a big shout out to Alex, who gave us a big super chat. Thank you. We appreciate you as always, Alex, coming in the clutch. The other question from Tim in LA, will Reggie go back to college football commercials, or do we need to wait until the defamation lawsuit against the NCAA plays out? I don't know. I think that, first of all, I saw on Reddit that people were already throwing out ideas of what the Heisman House could do, him ringing the doorbell that he's back.
So the problem is that defamation lawsuit is specifically saying that he lost opportunities because he didn't have the Heisman aura and he had sort of that stink on him. And so it was notable that he stopped doing the Wendy stuff and stopped doing the Fox stuff and all that kind of stuff when that went forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there would be an argument that he probably waits until that's settled.
Do you think there's some 4D chess here from the NCAA?
Well, but my thinking is, like, I suspect that will be settled soon, because I don't give him the Heisman back until I have the structure of a settlement in place. Like, I don't give him the Heisman back until I'm sort of in a position where I can deal, like, get this out of the way.
The Heisman Trust and the NCAA are two different
people. Oh, that's true. But he was suing the Heisman Trust, I think, too.
I'm just wondering if there was some sort of, like, you guys should just give him the Heisman Trophy back, and then that'll help us out, and then we'll all help each other out. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know the legality of all those things. Didn't go to law school, famously, so...
If I was him and my lawyer said I could, I would absolutely be doing commercials and everything like that.
This is a terrible analogy, but just go with it. I watched this documentary recently about this guy. I can't remember what the doc was. It was about these murders, and I think it was called Innocent Man.
The Innocent Man, the ones in Oklahoma?
In Oklahoma. And the guy says he didn't do the murder. He's adamant that he didn't do the murder. He's eligible for parole, but he can't get parole unless he admits he did the crime, and so he's sitting in prison still, waiting for the Innocent Project to get him out. Like, that's a sucky situation. This is not the same thing as Reggie, but, like, you can see the weird conundrum, right?
Yeah. Although Yenev in the chat does make a good point. Reggie doing commercials proves his point in the defamation case. If he does commercials at a higher rate this time than he did before, then he can point to that and say, see, I would have been making X percent more with Wendy's if right. I had had the Heisman, if I had been able to have the Heisman in my commercial.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Speaking of other people coming back, it's not just Reggie Bush. It's not just you and I. At least it's Kyle Ford. He is back. He is. He put on the social medias, my fault. I was tripping. Hashtag committed. He is transferring back from UCLA after a 1 year hiatus, presumably enrolling in grad school at USC, which makes me, you know, there is nothing more. I don't know exactly. I probably should have looked this up. Did he graduate SC before as an undergrad before he went to UCLA?
I would assume so because he was a fourth year. He was a fourth year player.
Because, yeah, like I would have assumed so too. But you know, there's nothing truer than a UCLA undergrad going to SC for grad school. So like, yeah. he kind of is doing this, not completely.
You're a Bruin for 1 year, and you're still a Trojan for life.
Yeah. So. Usually it's you're a Brewing for four years and then you're a Trojan for yeah. the next two and then the rest of your life. Yeah. Yeah. But for Kyle Ford, he was only a Brewing for 1 year and he's back. 22 catches, 236 yards as a Bruin last year, one touchdown in 2023. Interesting dilemma because he leaves because SC gets Dorian Singer. Dorian Singer was a first team All Pac 12. Wide receiver in 2022. And we talked about it, like, at the time. Obviously, you didn't want to lose Kyle Ford. It sucks for SC to lose him to UCLA, but you're getting in the first-team all-conference receiver. Like, it makes sense that, like, that's just the trade-off that you're going to have, right, personnel-wise. But Dorian Singer ended up not having a great career at SC, or a great season at SC last year. And Kyle Ford essentially repeated his last two seasons at UCLA as he had done at SC, which was he's like the fourth or fifth option, catches about 20 passes for about 250 yards and a touchdown or two. And now he comes back to SC for his final season in a time where SC desperately needs wide receiver depth. They've lost Taj Washington and Brendan Rice to the NFL draft. There's a bunch of guys who have hit the transfer portal. Mario Williams is now in Tulane. Dorian Singer's gone to Utah. Michael Jackson III to Georgia. Relique Brown to ASU. So you needed depth somewhere, and Kyle Ford is that guy.
Yeah, and like you said, like, it's possible that Kyle Ford is just, in any receiving corps, the fourth and fifth guy. And you can see a world where that is the case again this year, mm-hmm. where, you know, one of the things we have time, we're going to talk about the spring game. One of the things that was very apparent there is that USC can function with the wide receiving core of
yeah.
Zachariah Branch, Deuce Robinson, Jacoby Lane, Mekhi Lemon. We saw flashes from Xavier Jordan even, and Jaden Richardson, the transfer from Tufts. So, like, that group, I think, can function. And I think there is a universe where Kyle Ford transfers and repeats that same stat line behind the guys I just named. And that's just his lot in life. And unfortunately,
that's what happens.
Maybe, like, that might just be what he is after two ACL tears and all of that. He could also come in and be the veteran in a group. He could be the Taj Washington. You know, that was one of the things that happened last year that I thought was really interesting is USC had all this talent, all these guys that we pointed to as like they could be the big guy in that receiving corps. But when it came down to it, it was the veteran know-how of Taj Washington that got the job done and led the team in receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that Kyle Ford steps into that group that is supremely talented, but also we saw last year too, as the, you know, not all of these guys are going to take that step forward into reliability, pairing talent with reliability. I think that we might end up seeing those you know, five or six sort of be in and out and floating in and out, and maybe you have a Zachariah Branch game and a Deuce Robinson game and a Jacoby Lane game and a Mekhi Lemon game and, you know, Xavier Jordan game and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
the Taj Washington of that group, the equivalent, will be the one who is just always there catching three or four passes every game and just being super reliable. And I could see Kyle Ford being that guy with Miller Moss.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost sucks that he left last year, because he could have been in that receiving core last year. He could have been a 500-yard receiver behind Brendan Rice and Taj Washington. Like, yeah, it wouldn't have been shocking to see him.
Well, especially with Mario Williams not having the,
and Dorian Singer just sort of not being there.
The advancement that we thought they would have.
USC ended up having to thrust, you know, Deuce Robinson into a role that I think they was a little bit early for him to be in, and Kyle Ford could have been doing that. So like, it would be really, really fun to see Kyle Ford come back and be the Taj Washington equivalent. Obviously very, very different players, but in terms of what they bring to that room, and just experience alone, experience and reliability could be the key to being the leading receiver for USC. That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily bet on that. Again, at a certain point, players are who they are. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Ford is, it's possible he just is this. He is 250 right. to 350 yards. And there's USC not that can many use
Zach
that.
Hyman's out there.
No, but USC could use that. USC needs that. Like, every team needs those guys. So the depth is wonderful. The veteran, this is wonderful. He was a fan favorite for a reason before, you know, turning around and putting on that UCLA mm-hmm. blue. So he won me back with the tweet. My fault. I was tripping. That opened the door for me to craft my greatest tweet of all time easily. Like, the universe came together for Kyle Ford's commitment announcement the day before to be my fault. I was tripping, to wake up on Wednesday morning and the Heisman Trust gives the Heisman back to Reggie Bush, so that I could wake up and tweet, quote, my fault, I was tripping, and attribute it to the Heisman Trust. Like, I will not craft a better tweet than that in my life. And it was all because Kyle Ford gave me that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And I will cherish him forever because of it. So
before we move on, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about Kyle Ford. Where do you think he ranks on USC's all-time catch list? Catch leaders.
30th?
30th? No. 104th.
Oh.
But
I was thinking he's been around for like 5-6 years, so who knows?
I'm gonna give you guys, and I'm gonna give you some names, and you tell me if they have more or fewer catches than Kyle Ford at USC. Only USC.
At USC, okay.
We're not talking about the UCLA year.
Overall, okay.
Adoree Jackson, more or less?
More.
Kyle Ford has one more catch than Adoree Jackson.
Close. Yikes.
Yeah. Red Ellison.
More.
Red Ellison, yeah, has 13 yeah. more than him.
He was around for a while as well.
Bryce Butler.
More.
Bryce Butler, more by one.
Because all of these guys had at least one season where they were like,
yeah,
the number three receiver, and Kyle Ford's never even gotten up to number three receiver.
No, but he's just been very consistent.
He's just been consistently number yeah. four or five in yeah. every receiving core he's been in, yeah. which again might just be who he is.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, no shade. I think USC could use that, but
yeah. I'll tell you who ranks high on the list though is Hokie P, top Trojan fan.
Highest, living up to top Trojan
fan. Thank you, dude. Big, big super chat. We appreciate you. Our longest tenured listener, according to himself, is Hokie P, which I believe him. I don't doubt
it. I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been around a while now.
He's been around a long time. Yeah. We met him at the meetup in, before the Texas game in 2017.
Yeah, and 2017 was a long time ago now.
That was a long time ago. Kyle Ford was hadn't had an ACL tear at that time. Yeah.
By the way, I'm not to derail us, but I saw a tweet that was talking about how Jaden Daniels threw a touchdown pass
to Brandon Ayuk. That was defended by
Deommodore Lenore.
Yeah.
There was one other player that's like been in the league for a million years already that was included in that. I feel like Kyle Ford is now
it's
of that
generation.
It's
weird to me, like the anti-Caleb stuff on draft Twitter and stuff is so
silly.
Corny. But the weirdest part is when they nitpick games that he had at Oklahoma, and it's like, dude, did you
watch Jaden Daniels when he was a freshman?
Did you know Jaden Daniels before last year? Like, there's significant amount of film of him at ASU just being mediocre. Like, yeah. What are we talking about here?
Well, there's weird comparisons with Caleb. I think the only player that I think you can do a true comparison with is Caleb and Drake May, because both of them only had 3 years in college. Everybody else that you're talking about, these are guys with 5-6 years of experience in the college game. And
guys develop.
Like, it's right? Like people say, like, Caleb's raw. Well, yeah, no crap. He was a junior, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jaden Daniels played with, like, Todd Heap at ASU. Let's talk about USC's other incoming commitment on the transfer portal this week. FSU cornerback Greedy Vance, an incredible name. Put him on the all-time name team. Greedy Vance.
I can already see the headlines for any interceptions that he or turnovers he produces.
Yeah. Three-star originally out of New Orleans in the 2020 class. Enrolled at Louisville. Then transferred to FSU ahead of the 2022 season. Career high 36 tackles and 7 pass breakups at Louisville as a sophomore in 2021. Career high 3 interceptions at Florida State in 2022. But last year, he only had 18 tackles and a pick. He's got 1 year to play one. Fits into a USC defense that is remarkably improved, as we'll talk about when we, you know, jump through their spring game talk. What are your thoughts on Greedy Vance?
It's like adding Kyle Ford, but on the cornerback side of things, because what I mean by that is when you look at what USC has going for it at that position, because coming out of the spring game, I mean, you got to feel really good about that cornerback group.
Yeah.
Between DeCarlos Nicholson, who looks really good, John Humphrey, who's just a steady Eddie, Malachi Crawford and Marcellus Williams both made big plays in that game, and we didn't even really see a ton of Jacoby Covington, and I'm a big fan. And Prophet Brown is another riser. So USC has really, really solid top line talent, but not a ton of depth anymore because of all the transfers out. So he's a guy with starting experience in the ACC, potential leader in the locker room. It'll be interesting to see how much he's going to be able to impact that group. I'm not sure there's a clear path to starting, unless he wins a competition, which if he does that, that's very good. Very good news. Competition is all good. So, yeah.
Yeah, the more the merrier, especially at corner, which is a place SC has needed to desperately improve, and it's one that supposedly has been improving during the spring. Lincoln Riley has talked about it. There was a quote last week that when your corners aren't good, you see the leaks or whatever. Was it leaks? Is that what the way he put it? It sounded really damning for USC's defense from last year. But so let's talk about the other guys leaving USC this spring. Isaiah Rakes, the incoming defensive lineman from Texas A&M, he has already bounced back to the ACC to the SEC, to the Auburn Tigers. Traquan Fagans is back in the transfer portal. Jason Zandamello, who is the top-rated recruit in USC's 2024 class, offensive lineman, sort of the big stud of that class, he's already in the transfer portal. He's homesick, originally from Mozambique, came to the States in 2020, moved to Clearwater, Florida. He is homesick and missing Florida. And then there's Cooper Lovelace, the guy who could do the splits. Came over to SC during the COVID season. He is in the transfer portal as well.
Isaiah Rakes leaving is a big problem. It's a big problem because the biggest issue for USC defensively, aside from like creating a linebacker core that could be functional, mm-hmm. is size up front. They've put on a lot of weight because of the training program that they've been doing with Benny Wiley and with the new defensive staff sort of prioritizing size a little bit more than the last staff, well, a lot more than the last staff. But you also can't like necessarily turn the bodies that USC had into the 320-pound like nose tackle that Isaiah Rakes was potential to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no one else that really fits that mold.
Well, you could. It would just take some money on the distress count.
I mean, yeah, a lot more. Maybe not being very healthy doing it.
Yeah.
So that's a big, big blow. I don't quite understand what happened there. He was here for like 2 months and then gone. Maybe he was homesick for the South. Maybe he didn't connect with the staff or the team. I don't know. Who knows what happened there, but it's a big blow to that defense. And I think it's going to force USC to be, I think they got to be super aggressive in the portal right now for any big defensive lineman that hit the market, mm-hmm. because that's a gaping hole in the defense that I don't necessarily see a solution for on the roster right now.
Yeah. And one of the solutions that could have been there, Jay Toya, just came off the portal.
Transferred back to UCLA.
He's back at UCLA. He pulled the Bear Alexander. So, so there's that. We'll see what happens on the defensive line.
And then just quickly on Zandamella and Lovelace, not huge losses on the top end, but USC's depth on the offensive line was already pretty poor, and it just got more poor. So again,
Zandamella is a big, big loss, not necessarily for 2024, but for the future. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, I think the portal will be something that they need to find some bodies in. Even if they're not like starter level,
mm-hmm.
they need more offensive linemen than they have on the roster right now. That much is clear.
All right. Before we get to the mailbag, let's run through SparkNotes version of your thoughts about the spring game on offense. Four picks. The young receivers sort of had their moments, but four picks, including two from Miller Moss, one from Jaden Maiava, and one from Jake Jensen. The offensive line was what they are. The running backs had their moments. Your thoughts on the offense?
Yeah, I think there could be... I think it would be fair to have some concern about the performance of the quarterbacks, considering the interceptions that they threw. Mm-hmm. It would be one thing if those interceptions were incredible athletic plays from USC's corners. They weren't. They were bad throws for the most part, and that's a problem. But I will say I'm not necessarily hitting the panic button yet on that. I think that you will have, again, USC does not have a quarterback of Caleb Williams caliber on the roster anymore, and we need to adjust to that fact.
Right.
And it's very clear, but that doesn't mean that this can't be a functioning offense with either of these quarterbacks. I saw things from both of them, from Miller Moss and Jaden Maiava, that proved that they can function in this mm-hmm. offense, especially looking at what they were doing in that game. Vanilla as vanilla can be,
yeah.
against a defense that has been playing against this exact offense all spring and knows all the plays by now by heart. So I'm not tripping over it. My big takeaway on offense from the spring game was the wide receivers. I came in just a little bit concerned about, could USC trust the guys that they have coming up? There's a lot of potential there, but not a lot of proven production. And I just think you look at Mekhi Lemon making plays, Jacoby Lane making plays, Deuce Robinson making plays, Zachariah Branch's talent, and Xavier Jordan really stood out to me as somebody who maybe could contribute right away in a way that I didn't necessarily expect. So I feel very good about that unit, aside from depth, which will be something I say about pretty much everything.
I think the receiving stuff is interesting because wide receivers shining out in camps is the thing that happens every year. Like, look at how good Michael Jackson III has looked in every single camp that he's been in, right? You look back at all the guys that have ended up transferring somewhere that were, you know, stud receivers at SC in practice, that ended up, you know, going somewhere. The guy who went to Oregon, Devin Williams, yeah. He was someone who was lauded about, which in hindsight I always think was funny because, you know, so many people were upset about him not getting playing time, and he didn't get playing time over Amon-Ra St. Brown, Michael Pittman, Tyler Vaughns, and Drake London. Yeah. Like that's not an indictment on him, right? Yeah. But you always have these guys show out, and then you get to the season, and then it's like, well, where was Michael Jackson III? Like, he looked really good. Like, what happened? I think this is going to be interesting because the way that the roster is at wide receiver, these just are the guys. Like, there isn't those star-studded players ahead of them. Yes, there's Zachariah Branch there, but, like, he is not the
Finished article either.
Yeah, he's not the finished article, and he's not the incumbent that SC has had before, like where, you know, Michael Pittman came off of a great year and was returning again. Drake London going into year three, and he was definitely the star man going into that receiving core.
Well, remember when Juju had to take over, and like the question in the offseason was, can Juju be the number one guy? That was him coming off a really productive sophomore season. That was him going into a junior season. We're looking at this group and expecting guys who were all freshmen last year to, who's the number one receiver there, and they're all going to be sophomores. Like, it's,
but they're all going to get a chance. Yeah. They're all going to get a chance. So you don't have to just worry about them sort of being a spring flash in the pan, because like, these are going to be the guys. They're going to have to prove that they can still do that in games, but heck, they did it in the Holiday Bowl, right? Like, Jacoby Lane looked really good in that Holiday Bowl, and so did Mekhi Lemon. So an
outrageous one-handed catch in that spring game.
Like, yeah, they had great plays in the Holiday Bowl too with Miller Moss at quarterback. Let's talk about the defense really quick. Interceptions for DeCarlos Nicholson, Malachi Crawford, Prophet Brown, Marcellus Williams. DeCarlos Nicholson looked great. What are your thoughts on defense so far?
DeCarlos Nicholson is a very tall dude, and he plays tall, and that is lovely. I was extremely impressed with him out there. Got super excited. He was one of the guys that I'm really, really excited to see among all of those corners.
Corner. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw somebody on Twitter, I wish I could remember who it was, that said it was like, makes you think about like what Caleb the safety from last season that I'm Kalen Bullock. What Kalen Bullock could have been as a corner, is sort of what DeCarlos Nicholson is. Not to throw shade on the previous cornerbacks coach, but I think the thing I'll say was very, very apparent from the performance of the cornerback group as a whole is that they were there where they were meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
They were capable of making plays when they were in the positions that they were supposed to be.
Yeah, paying dividends.
Like I said, the interceptions were all essentially bad throws, but those were players being in the position to take advantage of bad throws. And one of the things that drove me crazy about USC's DBs group over the past couple of years is USC was playing quarterbacks who were making bad, who were not pinpoint zipping every single throw exactly where it needed to be, and USC just was leaving guys a million miles wide open and letting them do whatever they want. That group out there that was playing in the spring game did not look like they were going to end up in those positions, and that is extremely, extremely encouraging. In so far as you can take the spring game encouragement. As we always say, the spring game is a zero-sum game. Anything that the defense does good, it could be a bad reflection on the offense. Anything that the offense does well, it could be a bad reflection on the defense. So yeah, we can't necessarily lean on any of these observations as good or bad, because every good observation we make could be a bad observation for the other side. Every year, you know, the offensive line looks so good. Well, is that because the defensive line is not good?
Yeah.
Oh, the defensive line looked amazing. Well, is that because the offensive line is not good? All of those things are sort of part of this process. But I did appreciate that the DBs were ready to make plays, and you really like what you see from all of them in terms of putting themselves in those positions. So,
yeah. 100%. Let's get to the mailbag. We got a bunch of mailbag questions, and then we'll wrap this thing up after that as well. Alicia, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash, because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You've got mail.
All right, let's get to another Discord message we got from our pal Tim in LA. If I could only go to one away game next season, what is the way too early pick? I think he means this upcoming season. Is it Michigan?
Is it not Michigan? I mean,
I think Michigan is the great pick from, like, it's early in the season.
Could be LSU. Like, go to Vegas.
I feel like LSU might be the pick to enjoy the game more.
Yeah.
I worry about SC going into Ann Arbor for the first time in the Big Ten. First Big Ten road game. It's Michigan. However, that team is going to be a completely different team than the one that they faced. So, and with a slightly different coaching staff, right? So I don't know. I think Michigan seems like the obvious answer there for sure. Because outside of that, it's not going to be Maryland. You and I are going to the Washington game. We're pumped about that. But the Washington game is, you know, like, SC has to go on the road and play both of the national championship finalists next year. And both of them are just drastically different teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Seattle is always a fun trip. I think that's a good trip. I think that Maryland could be Maryland and Minnesota could be trips that you make the most of. But when it comes down to it, if we're talking about going to one of the historic venues in college football, if we're talking about like bucket list stadiums,
yeah,
the Big House is one of them. So yeah, 100%. It's Michigan. If you're talking about wanting to enjoy a weekend, it's LSU. Go to Vegas.
The sucky part about the LSU thing is that it's in Vegas in August.
Yeah, September 1st.
Or September 1st, right?
It's like August.
The whole point of playing LSU is like the corn dogs, man. The tailgating. Like they're it's an elite tailgating school. You can't tailgate in Vegas.
No. But when you go to a game in Vegas, you're not going for the tailgating. No. Again, you're not going for the college football experience. This maybe sums it up. If you want a college football experience, you go to Michigan.
Yes.
If you want a weekend that could be really fun, LSU.
Yes.
Just don't go in with the results of that game dictating whether or not you will be having fun or not.
But that's how every trip is.
I mean, yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, 100%. West Texas Mike says, Alicia would say USC is healing. USC has a new defensive coordinator. Andy Enfield is gone, and Reggie Bush has his Heisman Trophy back.
Yes, but at what cost? At what cost? Because transference is alive and well. Well, alive and painful, my friends. And Liverpool have just put me through the ringer over the last few weeks, ending in the most disgraceful display of derby performance I have ever seen.
It's a derby.
Derby, the Merseyside derby. That was painful today after Reggie Bush. But the moment the Reggie Bush news happened, I knew, well, it's going to be a rough day for me from the Liverpool's perspective. So, yes, USC is healing. Liverpool is not. There is balance in the universe. The Clippers lost the night before, too. So, like, we're really racking up our transference. So,
yeah. Lamont says, Mike and Alicia, hey, long time no see. You guys must have got my Twitter message earlier about requesting an emergency pod. If you did, it doesn't matter. I still can't believe it in my mind. Yeah, we knew, first of all, we were going to record today no matter what.
Yeah.
But it made it a lot easier to have stuff to talk about when...
It was like the universe was saying, yes, you were correct to move your recording date. Because we were thinking about doing on Monday, but I had lost my voice because I've been getting over a cold. And it was like, well, maybe not have me croaking and coughing on air. So
I think we're gonna go with Wednesday.
I think we should stick with Wednesdays for now. It just seems to always work better for our schedules. So
yeah. Ron Murray says, can we have Juju Watkins lead the team out of the tunnel? She should.
I would be shocked if they don't.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think they should.
Here's a question for you. Honest question. Is Juju Watkins right now, at this second, the most famous USC student?
Yes.
Okay. Secondly, when was the last time that the most famous USC student was not a football player? Okay, aside from...
Was the football team good when O.J. Mayo was... I don't remember.
Yes, it was the Pete Carroll era. Okay. I guess what I'm going to say... this is... What's the girl from the... She was in School of Rock.
Oh, Miranda Cosgrove?
Yes, I guess you could say she was probably more famous than, like, Matt Barkley or whatever in the world.
Yeah.
But, it's crazy to think, like, we are in a world that is so drastically different in terms of, like the women's NCAA tournament was, A, just better, more interesting to watch, more fascinating, and it literally outdrew
the men.
On TV, the men.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is a whole new world, right? And SC has Juju Watkins, and I think you can make the argument she's probably the biggest name in college basketball right now. Is she not?
She's the biggest name in college basketball left.
Everybody else left.
Kenneth in the chat has blown your thing out of the water, though, because Olivia Rodrigo is a USC student, so...
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. Fair. Whatever. Okay. biggest USC athlete,
yes,
right?
The biggest USC athlete is a women's basketball player. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So I need someone who was around when I wasn't, 3 years old to tell me that 1992.
How big was Cheryl Miller?
No, Cheryl Miller was in the 80s. Oh. In 1992, was Lisa Leslie a bigger known name than like Johnny Morton or Rob Johnson? Curtis Conway. I'm going to guess no.
I'm going to guess not, but I don't know.
She obviously has been a bigger celebrated athlete than those three in terms of stature and all that stuff. But like,
the coverage of coverage of the women's game back then would have been, I suspect, very SC localized.
Women's basketball was playing in the Lions Center.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that just what we've seen over the past couple of years is just an explosion of women's sports just getting more attention. Part of that is star power.
Yeah.
I think that the big thing that you can point to between the men's tournament and the women's tournament is the men's tournament simply lacked star power.
There's star power.
And the women's tournament was overflowing with star power, and when it comes down to it, star power is everything in sports. And when you can have the noticeable names like the Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins,
Paige Beckers,
like
it helps that in women's college basketball that the players are able to stay there for so long because this sounds weird, but in part because the WNBA doesn't have the pull that the NBA has. The irony here is,
well, because Caitlin Clark,
the WNBA blowing up now
is going
to
make
if Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Paige Beckers go to the WNBA and suddenly they're making four times the amount that they were in 2 years, which is possible when they get a new TV deal and all that kind of stuff. Is that going to make it more likely that someone like Juju Watkins doesn't stay 4 years at SC? Because staying so long is one of the reasons that you're able to like actually know who the star players are. Like you always knew who the star players were at UConn, the UConn women too, like Taurasi and Maya Moore and all those.
Right, but there was like one name in women's sports every year. And this year just felt unique because you had the Caitlin Clark. You had last year setting the stage for the Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese in the national title game.
And could you
set the stage for this past season where Caitlin Clark was breaking every record on the planet?
Yeah.
And then you also had the introduction of Juju Watkins. And,
too many Jujus.
And Paige Beckers was back healthy. And like Camilla Cordova was taking over at South Carolina, all of that. So like you just had, it was a perfect storm of the players who had stuck around for several years and the sort of young gun that Juju Watkins is.
Right.
Like, I just think...
On the men's side,
you just get, like, Isaiah Collier could be a huge star in college basketball if he stuck around.
Yeah.
But he's going to the NBA. Yeah. So he won't be a college basketball star. He'll be an NBA star, hopefully. There are a lot of guys like that who, if you get injured as a freshman in college, that basically does your college legacy in, because you only have those 6 months to make people know your name in college, or you'll go off. And then you end up with sort of like the older veteran guys that grow into familiarity, but it takes time. And college basketball men's basketball hasn't really allowed those guys to merge in the same way.
Yeah. Next question we got from Yenav on YouTube, which I know that is not the name. And every time we say it, we get corrected about what the actual name is. And we never forget. We need to write a little post-it on our screen. Yeah. But is Bear Alexander in danger of being Leonard Williams? That is our one good lineman. I see what you're saying, but I would say that there is no such thing as being in danger of Leonard Williams, because Leonard Williams in 2014 was so outrageously good. If you end up with a defensive player that is outrageously as good as him, even if the guys lining up to him are like George Uko and Claude Pallone or whatever. Like, there's worse things to happen if you're Leonard Williams, especially when he went, what was it, sixth overall to the Bears? Not the where did he go?
To the Jets.
The Jets.
Yeah. I mean, if Bear Williams is Leonard Williams this year, then
Bear Alexander
is Leonard Williams this year, then something has gone right at an individual level. I think that there is a danger of Bear Alexander being the only NFL level talent on that defensive line. I think that is probably getting more to the spirit of what the question is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's certainly a possibility. And USC, there's a lot of schools out there who live with that, would love to have that conundrum. But at USC, like when we grew up in the Pete Carroll era where all four guys on the line were future NFL players who would stay in the league for many years in the NFL, if not become stars, like, the difference is notable. And you look at the Georgias and the Alabamas and the Michigans of the world, Ohio States, they have guys who expect to get drafted and play in the NFL on their lines. And that sort of sets the tone for them in the trenches.
Yeah.
Does USC have that right now? I don't know. This is why you bring in Coach Henderson to be somebody who develops those guys, and he knows what NFL level players look like,
mm-hmm.
and has coached up players to be NFL level. And I mean, theoretically, what he did with the Rams defensive line this past year and over the years, where Aaron Donald is your Bear Alexander is your Aaron Donald, obviously not making that direct comparison, but you know, your big man on campus, he got a ton out of the guys who were next to him. And that's hopefully what he's able to do with the group that USC has now.
Yeah.
I like Anthony Lucas as a prospect. I like Jamal Muhammad as a prospect. I think there's a lot to like about the guys that USC has there. They just need to take a step forward, and we haven't seen them do that, but that's why you hire the coach that you brought in.
Yeah, and you saw that with Jamal Muhammad early on last year. He showed big flashes in September of he could be sort of the guy who maybe ended up being that Leiatu Latu kind of guy that's going to fit in with the new defense. But he and Solomon Bird and all those guys after September sort of really fell off defensively.
It needs to be more than flashes. That's
exactly. Yeah, 100%. All right, let's wrap this thing up with everyone's new favorite segment.
Oh, I can't believe I married a serial killer.
Yeah. Alicia, what's your latest evidence you married a serial killer?
Okay, this requires some backstory.
Uh-oh. I'm nervous.
The backstory is that the thing that started the ball rolling on all of my Liverpool angst earlier this year was Jurgen Klopp stepping down or announcing that he would be stepping down at the end of the season for Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
Michael comes into the room in the middle of the night, and because this is this happening in England, so it happens in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And he wakes me up and he says, "Sorry, but this feels like one of those big moments that is worth waking you up for. Jurgen Klopp has stepped down."
Yeah.
And all the while he's recording this so that he can send it to our friends, because it's going to be funny when I wake up and I'm like, what the heck? And I didn't believe him. And it was sort of, it created like a little funny exchange that he recorded that he sent to our friends. So that was cute.
Yeah.
This morning at 6 o'clock a.m. Pacific time.
It was 6:50 something.
Sorry, 6:50. Oh, it was almost 7. That's right. My alarm was about to go off. It was almost 7. And he comes into the room and he says, "Hey, big news. Feels like I should wake you up. Reggie Bush got his Heisman back." And again, I don't believe him because I just don't believe anything you say to me.
Which is ridiculous because I'm a stalwart for truth.
Yes. But he was telling the truth in both instances.
Of course.
There's that.
As always.
Good track record there.
100%.
But he wakes me up and he says, you know, this big thing happened. And I'm like, oh, wow.
That's right.
And I'm like, well, what time is it? And he says, 7. And I say, are you just going to bed now?
Which you did not need to say on the recording for our friends to figure out that I'm an invalid who stays up all night like a sicko.
This man was awake. He had not slept. It was 7 a.m.
Yeah.
He had not slept.
I was busy. I had a very productive evening getting a whole bunch of work done.
This is who I live with.
ADHD, baby.
There is a very good chance on any given morning that when I am waking up, like, it's like our marriage is like me on a normal sleep schedule and you like working the night shift, except that I work the night shift and you technically have a 9-to-5, and yet somehow I am waking up in the morning and you are going to sleep in the morning. I do not know how you function. So the reason I bring this up is that I married a serial killer. I don't think your brain can possibly be healthy living this way. Like, how do you function as a human being?
I find a way. I don't know. Like, you don't have to go so hard on me here.
It's like you're a vampire. Maybe you're not a serial killer.
Is that a bad thing?
I usually don't care
for garlic, so that kind of works out.
Vampires are monsters, Michael.
Are they?
Generally, they're not the thing you want to encounter. No, they're very specifically vampires.
I don't watch horror movies.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know how you do it.
So you're saying that...
If I go...
Oh, I can't believe I married a serial killer?
That is what I'm saying. Yes. A serial killer vampire.
All right. I've got one. Mine for the week is one which everyone's going to rally behind me, as they should, every week on these. Here's the thing. Alicia has spent all the time I've known her talking about Chinese food. And she loves Chinese food. We live in an apartment complex with her brother, and her family lives down the hall. And her brother will scheme times in which...
My sister-in-law does not like Chinese food.
Yes, so when the sister-in-law is not going to be home, and maybe I'm not going to be home for dinner, these two siblings scheme, ooh, look at Chinese food. Like, ooh. We'll figure... All this stuff. Because I didn't really eat the Chinese food or whatever. So, it has come to be that in the last year or so, I've come around and had a reckoning, decided that I, too, am now a big fan of Chinese food. I am all about Chinese food. I want to eat Chinese food all the time. I got to get me my orange chicken. I love it. I can't get enough of this stuff. And what has happened? In the last 6 months, every time I want Chinese food... Honestly, I'm not feeling it anymore. It just hasn't been... I just haven't been up for it the last few times that we've had. I've spent my life hearing you talk about Chinese food. Now I finally like Chinese food, and you want nothing to do with it? Are you kidding me?
I mean, I go through ebbs and flows of what I feel like...
It's insane.
I feel like eating...
It's insane.
Like, I will be on a Mexican food kick. I'll be on a Italian food kick. I'll be on a Chinese food kick. I'll be on a Hawaiian barbecue kick. And then I will just get a little bit tired of it. Or want something different.
I can eat the same thing every day for 8 years in a row.
And we're in a part of the cycle where... I don't want to meet up with Jack Jones at Panda Express. And it sucks because, like, I thought for a second it was just, like, the Chinese food place that we would order from that's nearby. that I was just sort of like maybe a little bit out. The quality on theirs was sort of sometimes a little bit up and down, and maybe I had just gotten a couple recent ones where the quality wasn't that good, and maybe that was just it. But then we got like Panda Express, and I was like, I'm not feeling this either. So yeah, it's not that I don't like Chinese food. I just don't crave it right now.
Hokey P in the chat says, damn, Alicia. Yes, damn, Alicia is right. Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, well, we'll wrap up the episode with this, a kind word from our friend Jake.
You know, there's a lot more hardware in the USC trophy case than there is for UCLA.
Yeah, which is more true, of course, today. So, all right, we'll be back next Wednesday, we promise. We promise, for real. We'll be back next Wednesday, which will be May, is that May 1st? I think it's May 1st. May 1st?
Yes.
May some. No, it's not May 1st. It's May something.
May 1st. Yeah, next May Wednesday. 1st.
May Day.
The first day of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month.
You know what May 1st is?
4 days from Cinco de Mayo?
It's going to be the 11th anniversary of my concussion in middle school. 21-year anniversary of my concussion in middle school. 21?
You still haven't gotten over it. That's
I haven't.
You don't sleep.
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. Some say that it all points back to that one day, May 1st, 2003. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. 21 years since middle school? What is going
Robin
on?
Robin Murdy asked how Jessie is. Jessie is doing very well. She's sleeping on her new bed.
Yeah, she's on her new bed over there. Which, speaking of some serial killer stuff, maybe that'll be next week's.
Oh yeah, we have save it for next week. Make a
A doozy one.
Okay, I will fully admit you guys need to tune in next week for the I Married a Serial Killer, because he's correct. What he has to say, I will fully cop to. Serial killer behavior. There's your teaser for next week. Make a post-it note. We can't forget this, Michael.
Yeah, it involves dismemberment and knives too. Jeez. All right, we'll be back next time. Until then, we'll see you.
See ya.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.